I teach at Boyce College, and the classes that I teach are called seminars, which means that they're not primarily lectures. They are situations where I initiate discussion among the students. And not so long ago at one of those seminars, a student asked the question, why is it that when people begin thinking earnestly about Christianity, it seems like that they always start criticizing music and movie choices that young people make? And this student asked this with the attitude that indicated, this seems so unreasonable. Why won't they just leave young people alone with respect to their music choices and with respect to their entertainment choices? And I said, well, let's think about, just first of all, the volume of time that entertainment occupies in the average young person's life. A study came out recently in the last couple of months that indicated that people your age are spending 8.5 hours a day connected to some entertainment source. That would include iPod, connected to the internet for non-educational purposes, watching movies, and so on. And just out of curiosity, you know, I said to the class, you know, there were about maybe 20 students in there, I said, is there anyone in here who has not watched a movie this past week? Anyone? Let me ask the same question to this group. I think there were about 180 of you who signed up for this seminar. Is there anyone in here who has not watched a movie on TV or at the theater, any kind, on the internet? Anyone who has not watched a movie in the last week? Okay, looking at the crowd, there would be about 10. Let's say that they're 18. That would be 10%. I don't think there were 18 people who raised their hands, but about 10% of you never. Now, if I ask the question, how many of you have watched 3 or 4 movies in the last week, then a large percentage of you would raise your hand. I'm not asking you to raise your hand. Or if I ask, is there anyone in here who has not listened to a song on the radio or listened to a song on your iPod this week? There would be very, very few people who would raise their hand. Because music is all around us, movies are all around us, various entertainment sources are all around us, and it's not unusual for a person, not just of your age, but a person of my age, to wake up listening to music, to listen to music while you're getting ready for school, while you're on your way to school. If you don't ride the bus, then usually there's some kind of music playing. Many of you have personal listening devices, and some just walk around with the listening devices in their ears all the time. A recent study showed that the average person your age who has text messaging capability will send about 3,000 text messages per month. That's 100 a day. And, you know, why talk about entertainment when you get serious about Christianity? You got to be kidding me. What kind of a question is that? This is something that is occupying most of our waking hours. And if we are going to be serious about our endeavors to be like Jesus and earnestly pursue what will make us ultimately happy, then we've got to think about some guidelines that will help us make good decisions about the entertainment choices that we make. So just the sheer volume of entertainment says, yeah, you've got to think about it. But now I'm going to take about the next 15 minutes to talk about some other factors that make entertainment such a have-to-look-at area. We've just got to look at the entertainment and make choices about it because of these reasons. And so I'm going to give you the overview of the reasons right now and then just go through them one at a time. For one thing, entertainment is a powerful, effective way of communicating information. So that's going to be the first thing I'll talk about. A lot of times people don't think that entertainment is for communicating information. Let's just see. I'm going to say that entertainment is a powerful means of communicating information. And then I'll say that entertainment is a powerful means of cultivating emotion, the way that we feel about things. Thirdly, entertainment is very powerful influence, a very powerful influence upon us in the decisions that we make. And then the fourth thing that I'll say about entertainment is that it is a very powerful means of creating and cultivating community. And so there are these four things that, so broken down, entertainment affects our intellect, it affects our emotions, it affects our will, and it affects our society. And then, after I've taken about 15 minutes to do that, then I plan to take about 15 minutes to say, what are some scriptural guidelines that will help us to make good decisions with respect to the entertainment choices that we're faced with? And then I think that there will be some time left over for questions. I haven't looked at the schedule, so are we in here for an hour? Someone, is that right? Oh, I've probably got a schedule right there. Okay, so that should work out, and so we'll spend about 15 minutes, and then 15 or 20 minutes at handling questions. First of all, entertainment is an extraordinarily powerful means of communicating information. And the thing that makes it so powerful, for good or for bad, is that while we are being entertained, we often let down some of our critical fences that we would normally keep out. I sat in on the heard Josh Harris's sermon, and I heard him say, if we saw some of the things in real life that we see on television or in the movies, it would make us throw up. I think that's what he said. If some of the wild, crazy stuff that we watch on the movies were happening in our family, it would keep us up at night. We would be distressed. But what can happen is that when it's presented to us in an attractive package, great visuals, nice musical background, we're enjoying all of this, and all the while, there is a little message being slipped in. Or maybe not such a little message. Now, I know what some of you would be thinking and what some of your friends would be thinking. Are you crazy? I am not listening to my music to get information. That may be true. What I'm saying is that you are getting information. Or you would say, you know, I just like this movie. I know that it presents sinful scenarios, and I would not approve of that in real life, but it's okay because it's just on the movies. This illustration may be a little bit racy for this group. That would probably just make you listen to it a little bit harder. Let's say that my neighbor came over and said to me, hey, Jim, we've been neighbors here for about 7 years, and we're pretty good friends, and I was wondering if you'd like to come over and watch my wife and me have sex tonight. Are you crazy? I'm a Baptist preacher. Oh, yeah, forgot about that. Oh, yeah. Well, how about, my neighbor says, how about if we just, like, video it, and then you can watch it on video, just you and your wife privately. Are you crazy? No. That's wrong. Oh, I get it. Well, how about if I bring you over a tape of highly paid, very beautiful Hollywood actors having sex, and you watch that? Oh, well, that's different. Sure, bring it over. You know, that's kind of the attitude that we have. If this wickedness is cleverly packaged in a nice Academy Award-winning film, then who cares that they're not married, and who cares, so on. We don't always have to be deliberately seeking information to be influenced by the information that is conveyed in entertainment. I'm amazed that sometimes young people will say, hey, I just like the music, I'm not even listening to the lyrics, and then you watch them while they're listening to it, and they can sing every word of the song. And also, the idea that entertainment is not really deliberately attempting to convey information generally will not hold up under the scrutiny of what the artists themselves say about their entertainment productions. whether it's a movie maker, whether it's a rapper, whether it's a singer, no matter what genre, when you hear those people interviewed on TV and they're asked about what they've produced, then they will almost always say, oh yeah, you know, I just really care about the environment, and so in this song I'm trying to say that we should be nice to whales and not cut down trees. In this song I am just trying to help young people know that all of these older people who are trying to tell them what to do, while they're well-intentioned, really cannot dictate the desires of their heart. And man, they just need to follow their hearts. I mean, that's the sort of thing that you hear when you hear your favorite movie producers, your favorite actors, or your favorite musical artists say. And there's almost no one who will ever say when they're asked, you know, what really drives you in producing the things that you do? There's no one who will say, hey, you know, man, I'm just like out for a totally good time. There's just almost no one who will say that. They almost always say, here's what I'm trying to get across. Now, of course, this fact that entertainment is a powerful means of communicating information can be used for good and has been used for good. You read books. I read books. Has anybody in here ever read a sermon by John Wesley? Three or four hands? Maybe. Not sure if you have or not, but maybe you have. Everybody in here has sung the songs that John's brother Charles wrote. Charles was also a very powerful preacher. John Wesley is one of the most influential men of the 18th century. And you've never read his sermons. Most of you probably never will. But you sing Hark the Herald Angels Sing. You sing other songs that his brother Charles Wesley wrote. Millions of people do. Or, in a group like this, some of you will be able to beat me on this illustration. But finish this sentence for me. When I stop, I want you to say what comes next. Say it good and loud. 67 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent... Oh, man, I can't believe so many of you knew that. You knew a new nation is what comes next. Because what I was going to say is, you know, okay, there are 4 or 5 of you who know, but there must have been 50 of you who knew that. But I probably should have chosen a less obvious document. Maybe I should have chosen the Constitution of the United States, which nobody ever reads. I know a lot of you have had to memorize the Gettysburg Address. But to read the Constitution of the United States and say, hey, this is what allegedly is governing the rule of our land, and we can't even say the next phrase. But can you say the next phrase of, here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus? Okay, everybody knows that. And pretty good singing, too. You're on tune. It could be illustrated again and again. I will illustrate it again. Probably no one in here has ever read a sermon by John Newton. But everybody in here knows, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. Music is a very powerful way of communicating information. And it can be used for good. Now this really makes sense because historically it has been very clever and mostly moral people who had access to avenues of entertainment. I scrutinize my own comment. I'll say mostly. Most of the stuff that has survived has been produced by people who were very clever and therefore we thought these clever poets, these clever playwrights are going to provide information that is worth listening to. And in most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, these poets and these playwrights were also persons who were concerned about perpetuating morality in the culture in which they produced their material. But that's no longer the case today. I don't think that the storytelling that fills most of our lives. I don't think that the music making that fills most of our lives, assuming that you listen to secular music, I don't think that most of the entertainment that is coming into our lives today is being produced by people who have the perpetuation of morality in mind, the perpetuation of good morality. But the fact does remain that most of these people are still very clever, very talented people. I'm hesitant to mention names, but I will mention a name here. Right now, an artist that is extremely popular is Lady Gaga. And Lady Gaga can sure sell a lot of records, and she can sure gain a lot of attention. And I think that she is a very talented and quite intelligent woman. Now, don't run out of here and say, great, the speaker, give me an answer, said Lady Gaga is good. No, I said that she was intelligent and that she was talented. What I'm going to say now is that she is not producing entertainment that is good. And I have done a little research. You know, there are some people who do music, and I think that they've kind of got just a general vague idea of what they're going to do. They know that it's kind of bad, but bad sells, and so they do it. And then there are other artists that seem to fall into a category of, I am deliberately going to try to undermine what is good, and I'm going to deliberately try to establish through my songs something that I know is evil. And but what these people recognize is what I'm telling you. Entertainment is a very powerful means of communicating information. And you and I are foolish if we think that we are not being influenced by the message of the entertainment that we enjoy. Nothing wrong with entertainment, but we've got to have some tools to make good decisions. Not only is entertainment great at communicating information, entertainment is also great at cultivating and creating emotion. Creates outrage at certain things, and that is just the characteristic, say for example, of some kinds of music. Not just rock and roll music, not just popular music. I could play for you three classical hits by people like Beethoven, Mozart, Haydn, those kind of guys, and I could say, now one of these songs is supposed to represent a thunderstorm. And you would just say, what? That's Beethoven's Sixth Symphony right there. That is the thunderstorm. I say, now one of these songs, I play all three of them for you, say, one of these is supposed to be very sexy. Well, I never really thought of classical music as sexy, but if I have to choose one, Ravel's Bolero, I think that's very sexy. And one of these songs is supposed to communicate a very pensive, thoughtful mood. Very introspective. Which one is that? Oh, well, that's the Rachmaninoff right there. And so even with classical music, their emotion can be very powerfully conveyed. Of course, that's also true with the pop music that many of us listen to, and the rap and the rock and so on. Very good at communicating emotion. Of course, this is also true with movies. I mean, a lot of times you'll be watching a movie and you don't know that it has a sad ending, but it has a sad ending, and suddenly you're crying. You're not thinking, these are just actors. There's a big group of people standing around them with cameras, and there's a microphone dangling over the head. You don't think that. You get all caught up in the emotion. And I had an example of this past week. There is an older woman that is part of the church where my dad was, and she sends out a lot of emails. And I sometimes wonder, does this woman do nothing but just search all day for hokey stuff on the internet to send out to people? And she doesn't send me very many emails anymore. I guess she found out from my parents that I didn't really like it. But I got one from her this past week. And it was entitled, Amazing Grace on the Black Keys. And have you any seen that video? Okay, you have to check it out. Just do a Google or YouTube search for Amazing Grace on the Black Keys and watch it. It's about 8 minutes. And I was already prepped. I thought, okay, I know it's going to be hokey. She says, you got to see this. I know it's going to be hokey, but I'm going to watch it anyway. I'm kind of interested in the black key scale, the pentatonic scale, and interested in John Newton, the author of Amazing Grace. So I'm going to check this out. And so, to make a long story short, before it was over with, I was crying. I started, you know, kind of with my arms folded. This is not going to get to me. But before it's over with, I've got chills all over my body and tears were filling my eyes. It is a powerful cultivator, it being entertainment, is a powerful cultivator of emotion. Now, it can be used for bad. It can also be used for good. Have you ever thought, why do we even sing in church? I mean, let's just take Amazing Grace, for example. I could say, as a preacher in a church, to say, God's grace is so amazing. It saved a bad person. And I was a bad person. I once was like someone lost, but then God found me. I was like someone who was blind, but now as a result of God's grace, I can see. And, you know, that's not bad. Why does it get a little bit stronger when it's amazing grace? How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see. But then it even gets more powerful when someone with a good voice sings, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound. That it becomes something that sticks in our mind. And it not just sticks in our mind, it also teaches us the way that we ought to feel about this grace. This is one reason why it's very important for appropriate musical scores to be set to theological texts, that the music and the words complement one another. Makes it very memorable, makes it more powerful as a means of teaching you how you ought to feel about the information that is being communicated. Well, not only is entertainment a powerful means of communicating information, not only is entertainment a powerful means of creating and cultivating emotion, entertainment is also a powerful means of moving you to make choices. It affects us volitionally. It affects the choice in us and the choices that we make. I have a recent example of this. You know, probably many of you will have seen the 25th anniversary recording of We Are the World. I remember 25 years ago when I was in my 20s and Michael Jackson and Lionel Richie first wrote that song, and all the people who were popular of that day began singing and recording. It was all over the airwaves, We Are the World, and they were drawing attention to Ethiopia and the crisis that was going on then in the starvation situation in Ethiopia. And as a result of that song, millions of people were moved to give millions of dollars for hunger relief in Ethiopia. And then in recent months, the same thing has been accomplished through the re-recording of We Are the World, drawing attention to the needs in Haiti. And there are probably people in this room who, as a result of that song, decided to send a text message that would donate $5 from your phone bill that otherwise would not have been motivated to do it. Music is a powerful way. Entertainment, movies, and so on, are powerful ways of motivating people to do certain actions. In the last month or two, there was a spot on the news that showed President Obama attending an event that was commemorating a part of the civil rights movement. And the camera zoomed in on President Obama while the crowd there was singing some of these protest songs that were popular back in the 1960s during the civil rights movement. And the commentator pointed out, President Obama does not know the words to this song. He's just kind of singing along, catching it, the last part of the words. But then it panned over to his mother-in-law, who was singing heartily the words. And the commenter made the comment, "The people who lived through it know the words to this song." And that's one of the characteristics of great movements that have moved societies to change and to take action against social injustice and so on. It is almost always intertwined with great songs that get people to think about what they're doing and to do something different. So entertainment is very powerful in getting us to change our minds about things and getting us to do something about the situation that is being considered. The final point of this first part, remember I said there are two parts. Why is entertainment so powerful? And then what does the Scripture teach us about how we can make good decisions? The last part of this first part is that music and entertainment are very powerful at creating and cultivating community, creating and cultivating societal ties. There are a lot of people who become friends because they like the same band. And even in the last 20 years, when listening has become so private, with iPods and Walkmans first of all, and then with iPods and various personal listening devices now, this impetus for music to long to connect with other people and entertainment to make us long to connect with other people has still not been obliterated by personal listening devices and personal watching devices. That was easy to see. When I was a kid and was playing basketball in the projects at town, that was when Michael Jackson and the Jackson 5 were still making music. And one of their last big hits was put out in about 1975, and it was called Dancing Machine. And that was the days when people were walking around with these big boom boxes, enormous boom boxes. So I'd be riding my bike down to the basketball court where I was going to play basketball in the projects, and all these boom boxes sitting in windows and on the shoulders of people walking down the street, tuned into the same radio station, were playing, "It's Dan, 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 Dancing Machine. What you get down? What you get?" I'm not going to do the choreography. But it was just all over the place. It was like the whole ghetto was just boom, 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 with Dancing Machine. Well, even today, everybody's walking around with their little iPod buds in. But how many times do you see somebody sitting side by side with somebody else, and she's got one bud in her ear, and he's got one bud in his ear, and they're sharing the same song? There's something about entertainment, something that we really like that we want to share with other people. We want to talk about the people who made it. We want to talk about the actors. We want to talk about the musicians. We want to talk about the producers or whatever. You know, there are some people who just like movies because Johnny Depp is in them. There are some people who just like movies because, who's the crazy producer that always does Johnny Depp? Yeah, Tim Burton. Anything Tim Burton does, I'm going to watch. And We develop some fan loyalty to the people that create the entertainment that we really like. It is very powerful at creating and cultivating community. It's one of the great things about singing the same thing at church. All of us are at the same time saying the exact same thing, hopefully thinking the exact same thing, either teaching and admonishing one another in these songs or else expressing the same thing to God. We're all doing it at the same time. A couple of my daughters are learning to play the violin. And if you've ever had a novice violinist in your house, you know that at times it can be painful. And, you know, the piano can make some unusual noises, but the violin really makes it sound like it's in pain and can cause pain. And so with this squeaky violin going a few weeks ago, some of the sisters, and there are six of them, some of the sisters said concerning the one who is playing the violin, "Please make her go upstairs. She's driving us crazy with that violin." And so my wife said, "Grace, will you please go upstairs and practice your violin?" And Grace Ann said, "I don't know why I'm even learning how to play this thing. Nobody wants to hear me play." And I thought, exactly right. And so I, head of the household, stepped in and said, she stays down here and plays. I want to hear it. And then it helped me to see the importance of every once in a while need to say, you know, that sounds great. That sounds good. And sometimes I'll get out my guitar and I'll play with her. And we've got a connection going on. When I'm playing guitar and she's playing violin, there is community being created. This is something that we are sharing together. But if you're a musician, you know there are times when you like to just sit by yourself and play your guitar or play your piano. But there are other times when you want somebody to come up to you and say, that's good. Could you play something else? Oh, yeah. Because what's happening there is that you are making a real social connection. And entertainment is a powerful means of creating and cultivating community. So since there is so much volume, I mean, just the sheer volume of entertainment in our lives justifies the question, or justifies the assertion, we must seek biblical guidelines. It's not just the sheer volume of it, but also that it's a very powerful communicator of information, very powerful creator of emotion, very powerful mover of the will, and a very powerful creator and cultivator of community that makes us say, please God, with something that is so powerful and so ubiquitous. I like that word. It means everywhere at the same time. Ubiquitous. If something is so ubiquitous, we need some guidelines, and we have some guidelines. Now, I want to tell you that I'm not going to give you a list of rules right now that say, okay, rock is bad, country and western is good. Rap is really bad, classical music is really good. I'm not going to give you a list of things like that. Instead, I'm going to give you three biblical guidelines that will help you as a Christian seeking the Lord to make decisions about the entertainment in your life. Turn in your Bibles to the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 6. And verse 12 is where you need to look. And 1 Corinthians 6:12 will, in fact, give us two of these three guidelines that I'm going to be talking to you about. Verse 12 says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be enslaved by anything. Now, in the translation that I'm reading from, the English Standard Version, the phrase, all things are lawful for me, is put in quotes. I think that's a good editorial decision by the translators, and that it gives us insight into what is probably going on here. You know, Paul is writing a letter to people who have been in communication with him. And so Paul has, either in person or in some letter, told them there are some things that you should avoid. I mean, for example, in this letter it says, at this time in our history, there are some people who are offended about the kinds of food that you eat, and so be careful about the kinds of food that you eat. And so the Corinthians are writing back and said, look, Jesus has pronounced all things to be clean. All things are lawful for me. And so Paul, writing back, says, all right, let's just grant that all things are lawful for you. Still, not all things are helpful. I mean, even if it is true that you can do whatever you want to do, which is not, I mean, you can see if you just look at the two or three verses previous, he talks about several categories of persons whose activities ensure that they are not going to enter the kingdom of heaven. Obviously, the things listed here are not lawful. So Paul is not saying, hey, if you want to do anything, go ahead and do it. But he's just saying, in this gray area, or in our, for our purposes today, may I watch R-rated movies? May I watch, I mean, because the R-rated movie, it's not nakedness, it's R-rated because it's violence. And violence does not appeal to me to make me want to go out and imitate that. So if it were sex, you know, I can't watch the R-rated movie. But can I watch an R-rated movie? Or what about a movie that just has a whole lot of bad language in it? And you know, it's not taking the Lord's name in vain. Or it is taking the Lord's name in vain, but that's just the way that people act. So is it okay for me to watch these kind of movies? Is it okay for me to listen to a musician who is a practicing homosexual? Or does this musician's lifestyle taint everything that he produces? Is it okay for me to watch a movie in which the lovers are not married and they get in bed? It doesn't show them having sex, but they're not married and they're getting in bed and everybody wants them to have a good time together. Is it okay for me to watch stuff like that? All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. You see, that's what it says. What this verse assumes is that you, as a Christian, are going to have a goal that you are seeking after. You want to believe and practice those things which will make you more like Jesus, or another way of putting it is which will make you ultimately happy. I mean, everybody wants to be happy. And you, as a Christian, have come to understand that ultimate happiness is offered to you through Jesus Christ and through adopting the way of thinking that was personified by Jesus Christ and the way of living that was personified by Jesus Christ. So, this is your goal. You want to be more like Jesus. Here's the question. Is the item of entertainment that you're thinking about, is it helpful? I'm not asking, is it a sin? I'm asking, is it helpful? When I was a teenager, I was eagerly pursuing athletics, wanted to get a college scholarship. And so early on, I made certain decisions about foods that I would and would not eat. I stopped drinking pop, stopped eating candy, stopped eating cookies, and so on. Why? Because those things were wrong? No, because I thought these things are not helping me to achieve my goal. My parents didn't think it was a sin to drink pop. They had pop in the house. But I just thought drinking this is not helpful for me. Those are the kind of decisions that you need to make about your entertainment choices. Is this helping me to achieve my ultimate goal? This past week, I saw some kind of educational presentation where the man had several diagrams of brains that had been deteriorated through various illnesses or practices like alcoholism and drug abuse. And it was pretty frightening to see the effect that, say, for example, Alzheimer's had on a brain, or the effect that methamphetamines had on the brain, the effect that alcohol had on the brain. And then he said this, every day that you live, you should be asking yourself this question, how do the choices that I make today ultimately affect my brain? And I think what Paul is saying here, and what the Lord is saying to us through Paul is, all right, You've got a vast amount of choices. For most people in this room, you are not really strongly tempted to go out and get drunk tonight. Most of you in this room are not going to be really strongly tempted in the next week to get high on drugs. A few of you, yes. Most of you, no. Instead, the kind of dilemma that you're facing is not between do I get drunk or do I stay sober, but do I choose what is permissible or do I choose what is best? All things are lawful. Okay, let's just grant. You can listen to whatever you want. Let's just say for the sake of argument, listen to whatever you want to. watch whatever you want to, do whatever you want to on the internet. But here's the question. Is it helpful? A second principle that is given to us in this verse of Scripture is, all things are lawful for me, but I will not be enslaved by anything. All right, let's just say you can watch what you want. But if you watch this, are you later going to be tormented by it? Are you later on going to say, why did I watch that? I wish I could get that out of my mind. When I was in about the fourth grade, a lot of my peers were reading these scary books that were by Alfred Hitchcock. I don't know if he was the author, if it just had his name, but there were this series of scary books, Alfred Hitchcock. They were all talking about them, and so I was a reader. I checked one of them out from the library that had a mummy in it. And so I read about halfway through that mummy book, and I couldn't sleep. I would look at my window, which was about 6 feet off the ground, and I could just imagine a mummy poking his head up in that window. And I was scared. I was tormented by that. And so I shut the book and said, I don't care who thinks that I'm a sissy for not being. I'm not going to be mastered by this thing. And in that instance, I think I showed some discernment because I knew myself and knew this is going to master me. You also need to know yourself. The illustration that Josh gave in chapel just a few minutes ago was just so good. You know, the big evil, and I'm going to get a little closer to it. It's not, I'm going to get away from it. I'm going to get a little closer to it. And then finally, it eats him. That is what happens so often with images and ideas that we encounter in our entertainment. We think, oh, you know, that was a good movie except for that one unfortunate scene. Yeah, that was too bad. You're me, that one scene is going to be what I think about later. And so I know that I just have to make decisions. This is not helpful, and this also has the potential to master me. All things are lawful. Don't be mastered by anything. Is it going to gain control of you? Does the Bible teach that it will gain control of you? Do older and wiser persons say, you better keep away from this because it can really gain control of you? Then why not make a better choice? There are so many options available to us. Why not make a better choice? So, first guideline, you ask, is this helpful? Second guideline, you ask, will this master me? And the third guideline is taken from 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 23. One of the things that we have already mentioned, is this helpful, is mentioned again here. But for our third principle, we want to get to the second thing that is here in 1 Corinthians 10, 23. Here's what it says. All things are lawful, but not all things are helpful. We've already been over that. But here's the new one. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. And then look at the next verse. Let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbor. Now, so far in the first two questions, does this help? We're asking, does this help me? And in the second question, will this master me? We're asking about ourselves. But now in this third question, we start thinking about what effect is this going to have upon people around me? Will I, by listening to this song and singing this song, give the impression to other people that I approve of this message? Will other people be encouraged to accept the message of this song? If I am constantly talking about movies, if this is just the main subject of conversation in my family or with my friends, am I doing my best to bring about what is going to be helpful to others? Is it lawful? Okay, let's just say for the sake of argument, all things are lawful. You can talk about what you want to talk about. But here's the question that you as a Christian must consider. Does it build others up? Because you are not just some little individual floating around this in this world in your little individual sack. You have vital connections with other people, other groups into which God has placed you. Groups like your family. Groups like your church. Groups like your friends. And we have bought into an unbiblical way of thinking about society if we think that society is just the voluntary conglomeration of individuals. It is more than that. Society is a conglomeration primarily, not of individuals, but of these fundamental groups that God has created, basically the family. And so you should just start right away. Will this listening choice bring my parents joy? Will this listening choice, will this entertainment choice cause my parents to be vexed? Am I going to build them up in my indulging in this? Okay, all things are lawful. Let's just grant that. All things are lawful. But here's something that the Lord calls you to that is higher than that. Is it going to help others? Is it going to build others up? And so, to me, this is far more useful than just a list of don't do this and do that. Although the persons in authority over you have the right to do that. I'm not questioning the right of your parents to say you may never watch any R-rated movie. I don't care how you answer the three questions that Dr. Oreck proposed at the Give Me an Answer conference. You're not allowed to watch R-rated movies. I support your parents in that. Or if your parents say you are not allowed to listen to secular music at all, I don't want you bringing up saying, well, the Bible says that all things are lawful. And I support your parents in their right to say you may and you may not do certain things. But eventually, and for many of you right now, you're going to be making these decisions on your own. When you make those decisions, I want you to ask these three questions. Is it helpful? Will it master me? Yes, that's the second one. Thank you. Somebody ought to write a song about this. Is it helpful? Will it master me? Does it edify others? Because if it doesn't do these three, then you should get a spanking by your mothers. Oh, yeah. Ask these three questions. Is it helpful? Will it gain control of me? Will it master me? Does it edify others? Now, if you have any questions, I would be glad to field those questions. We've got about nearly 15 minutes left. And let me say that, first of all, I want to receive questions that are points of clarification. So if there's something that you're not quite sure you understood, and you want to get it clearer, then let's first of all get questions for clarification. Any of those kind of questions? Yes? Point number three is, does it build up others? Does it help others? So in the first point we ask, does it help me? In the third point we ask, does it help others? Does it edify? Any other questions regarding clarification for some point that I made? Yes? It's 1 Corinthians 10:23. The question was, what was the scriptural text that supported the third question? Other questions that have to do with clarification. All right, then. Any question at all having to do with what we've been over? All right, then, there was a category for questions of clarification. There was a category for questions of what we've been over. And now, just any questions about anything in the whole wide world? Yes. Pardon? Do I like chicken gizzards? And the answer is yes, I do. Now, I know that in my classes, there is a certain tone that I adopt when I'm getting ready to let everyone go. And so once I've adopted that tone, I will sometimes say, any questions? And the majority of the class looks around with a look on their face that says to the other students, if you ask a question, I will kill you. Because he's getting ready to let us go. So, all right, I'm going to let you go. We have a question. Oh, look at all these steely glances of hatred. All right, the questioner makes reference to the parable of Jesus when there was a man who was possessed by a demon. The demon was cast out, but he never replaced the emptiness with something good. And so this demon goes looking around for someplace else to live, doesn't find it, and then he gets seven of his demon buddies to come back, and they find that this guy has cleaned up his life, and so they all live in him, and Jesus says the final condition of that man is worse than he was to begin with. Because now he's got eight demons living in him. So the questioner asks, if we start getting rid of bad entertainment in our lives, then what are we going to replace it with? Let me start very fundamentally with some basic things that you should consider. Do you spend more time playing on the internet than you do reading the Bible? Do you spend more time watching movies than you do praying? You're probably thinking, oh man, you really don't expect me to read the Bible and pray for 8 hours a day. No, I don't. But I think that you are a very foolish person if you think that your mind is going to be transformed with the tiny amount of Bible reading that most of you are doing. And you're kidding yourself if you think that you can get 5 hours a day of worldly philosophy pumped into your head, and all you do is read one page of a devotional in the morning that takes you 30 seconds, and that is somehow going to counterbalance it all. Yes, exercise some common sense in the sheer volume of time that you spend doing this stuff. But then the questioner asks, should a person just quit cold turkey? If you are engaged in some form of entertainment that is undoubtedly sinful, yes, you should quit cold turkey. I mean, if you're looking at pornography on the internet, you should quit cold turkey. If you are listening to a band and you know that they are consistently and persistently presenting beauty as if it's ugly and presenting ugly as if it's beautiful, and this is the consistent tone of every song that they sing, then you should stop listening to that band. So there are some things that you definitely should quit cold turkey if they're undoubtedly sinful. But here is where I think the guidance of biblically literate and culturally astute persons in your circle of acquaintances can be of great help to you. You know, maybe you're not exactly ready to listen only to the classical music station. Maybe that's just not where you are. There are alternatives. There are other alternatives where there are entertainers who are seeking to not just be entertaining, but also to bring glory to the Lord. And you might say, okay, you're talking about Christian music. And some of you might say, the Christian music station in my town plays music that is just 5 years behind the time. I mean, you just turn on the Christian music. You don't even have to hear them say Jesus. You know the way that they're playing that it's a Christian band. And that is not as often true as it used to be. But let's just grant that it is true. Ask the question, is it helpful? Is it going to master me? Is it going to build up others? And say, might I be willing to give up some of the cutting-edge musical technology that I love so much? Might I be willing to give up some of that so that my mind will be flooded with good messages that will help me to accomplish my goal of being like Jesus? It's a good question to ask. There are wonderful books to be read There are wonderful songs and music to be experienced. And there is so much. It comes as a surprise to many people that the majority of good entertainment from the past that has survived, especially in the last 2,000 years, has been produced by people who were deliberately trying to glorify God. And as I said in the introduction, that's not universally true, but that is often true. There's a lot of good stuff that you don't have to leave your house empty once you have cast out the demon of foul entertainment. You don't have to give up entertainment. You can use sanctified entertainment and to take the place. That was a great question. Is there another question? We have about 5 minutes. Yes. What do I think about fictional books like, I heard Harry Potter, and what was the first one? The Twilight Saga. I have not read the Twilight Saga. I have read about the first 3.5 books of Harry Potter. And the situation was, several years ago, some of my older daughters wanted to read Harry Potter. And I'd heard mostly bad things about Harry Potter, and so I said, well, I will read them to you. And so I read the first three, got halfway through the third, till I'd had about all I could stand. And although there are good, I think there are good things about, there are some things that concern me about Harry Potter, and like I said, I've not read the Twilight Saga. I think that you should subject every area of entertainment, including books like Harry Potter and the Twilight Saga, to this question. Is it helpful? In reading this, is there awakened in me a desire to bite people on the neck? That's a bad thing. It's bad. Don't do it. As a result of reading this, do I want to become a witch? Bad thing. Several years ago, my wife was driving down the road, and there were some little girls in the car that belonged to us, and they were talking about what they wanted to be when they grew up. And so one of them said, when I grow up, I want to be a missionary. My wife felt good. Another one said, when I grow up, I want to be a mom like mom. She felt really good. And then the 3-year-old spoke up, when I grow up, I want to be a witch. I think in most cases, reading Harry Potter is not going to give you an attraction to becoming a witch or a warlock. Does it have that potential? It certainly does. But I think in most cases, if you read Harry Potter and you want to become a witch or a warlock, that you've got problems that are far deeper than reading Harry Potter. And so again, I emphasize, if your parents have said, I don't want you reading this, then don't read it. But if your parents give you, you know, the option of you can read the Twilight series if you'd like, you can read Harry Potter if you like, then put it through this 3-question test. Is it helpful? Will it master me? And does it help others?